Welcome to Jason Powell's Pro Wrestling Boom Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. Get ready for the latest news, analysis, and interviews featuring big names from the world of pro wrestling. Here comes the boom!
Thank you, Paul Amlett, radio voice of the Minnesota Vikings. The NFL draft is less than a week away, and I'm assuming the Purple trade down for more picks if they can find a taker. But we'll worry about that next week because there's plenty to talk about in pro wrestling this week, as always. We have a first-time guest on today's show. He's now a pro wrestling media veteran, having worked for numerous outlets during his career. And he recently launched the Wrestling Writing Substack. And he attended Wednesday's AEW Dynamite in Pittsburgh. Dominic D'Angelo will be joining me to discuss his career and all sorts of AEW talk. But before we get to Dom, the .NET members are already listening to audio reviews of WWE Raw, NXT, MLW Underground, AEW Dynamite, ROH, and Impact Wrestling. And it's Friday afternoon as I record this, and they still have more to come with SmackDown and Rampage, of course. And they also heard my Q&A audio show on Monday, and the flagship, the .NET Weekly Audio Show, co-hosted by Jake Barnett and I every Thursday. All of those audio shows are ad-free, and the members have a special ad-free version of the ProWrestling.net website. Join us by signing up for membership today via pwmembership.net. And as always, if audio is your jam, you might be able to save yourself a few bucks. Visit patreon.com/prowrestlingDOTNET. You got to spell that part out. Patreon.com/prowrestling.net. And then you can learn about our various ad-free audio tiers. With the business out of the way, let's bring in Dominic D'Angelo. Back on the boom, and my guest today is here, there, and everywhere. I'm going to let him break down all the places you can check out his work. But he has launched a new Substack called Wrestling Writing. He also attended AEW Dynamite in person on Wednesday in Pittsburgh, so we're going to have plenty to talk about. Dominic D'Angelo, welcome to the boom.
Jason, thank you so much for having me. Like I said in the email correspondence, I was a PW Torch subscriber like 12 years ago, and so hearing you and Wade Keller on the live podcast that you guys would do on Blog Talk, it's an honor to be on here and talk a little wrestling with you. Yeah, but as far as what I'm doing now, I work for AdFreeShows.com with Conrad Thompson. I do several interviews on there. In addition to, I help out with social media, some of the social media accounts. So the Click This podcast with Kevin Nash, as well as Road Dog. And then I also work help out with the YouTubes with Arn Anderson and Kurt Angle. I think I might be doing a couple other things. I'm not sure. There's a lot on the plate. But in addition to that, I also work for MLW. I do their social media. And then there's one. Oh, Wrestling Inc. I also write for Wrestling Inc. as well. And then, yeah, along with this Substack I got going here on wrestling writing. So try to stay busy. And I always think I might have a little bit of downtime, but then I don't.
So. I think we probably should have started with who you don't write for. It might have been easier.
Right. Well, I had WrestleZone I previously worked for, but trying to think who else that I haven't dabbled in yet, in the dark arts with yet. But I'm going to try to knock out a few. I still got a checklist going.
Well, let's start with the wrestling writing name. Did you hire like an expensive marketing firm to come up with that one?
You know what? Yeah, focus groups. It's been filtered through so many. I've sought veterans' opinions on it. And finally, like after crunching the numbers and looking at the algorithms of all the social media accounts and Google, I figured this was the best route to take. Now, honestly, it probably took me like 2 minutes, and I was like, I don't want to put a lot of thought into the name itself. Make it simple.
Well, I saw that you had some fun with that in your introductory email, so I figured it was safe to razz you about it. But all kidding aside, tell me about the new project.
Yeah, so honestly, like back when I wrote for WrestleZone and when I contributed to the Torch, starting off, I would write op-eds here and there, and Wade would use them. And then when I would go to when I went to WrestleZone, I'd have a little bit of carte blanche to kind of write, give my opinion on things and anything like that. So I started doing that. Well, you know, just the job situations changed. My responsibilities changed, and so I didn't get much of a chance to do feature pieces anymore and kind of like focus on, and like it just kind of helps me get better as a writer and kind of work on that a little bit and hone the skills. And so finally, I was just like, you know what? I've been wanting to write a little bit more. I know I don't have a lot of time, but when I can hammer something out, I can just post it on here and keep it simple and spruce it up a little bit, make the whole thing look nice. And so that's why I kind of went with the Substack. I was initially going to do a full-blown website, but I was like, you know what? That's going to be a little too much work to kind of spin those plates. So I was like, a Substack will be good because all I got to do is write, maybe post a couple pictures on there. And it gives me a little opportunity, a platform to show all the interviews that I've done over the course of my writing career so far, too. So I'm going to kind of utilize that in a lot of ways. So that's where a lot of the inspiration came from. It's just a just another outlet that I can kind of do that I haven't been able to do doing social media and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's kind of where it all stemmed from. So it's been fun so far, a little getting my name out there a little bit more.
I tell Colin McGuire, I've told him in the past that I like live vicariously through him. He writes our long form pieces, the McGuire's Monday blogs. And I'm envious because I enjoy long form writing, but there's no damn time anymore, Dominic. And we're getting more wrestling by the sounds of it, with maybe two more hours of AEW, which we'll get into. But I don't want to get too far ahead. Tell people where they can find wrestling writing and all the details about Substack, how that all works.
Sure. Yeah. So you can go to, I believe it's just substack.wrestlingwriting.com. It might be the other way around too. But it's, you go there and all it is, yeah, is you'll see the latest post that I do. You can subscribe to it, obviously, with Substack. So type in your email and you can just access it there. And what I'm going to try to do is mostly fresh content. If I find something that's kind of appropriate that maybe I've written in the past, I'll post that up there. Maybe if it like adheres to something that's going on currently or something to that effect. But a lot of the time, it's all going to be fresh new stuff when I have the opportunity to do it. So yeah, wrestlingwriting.substack.com is where you want to check it out. So yeah, it's been fun so far.
And for the lazy listeners who need a nudge, if they go there right now, what are they going to see?
Okay, so right now you will see the latest post is going to be my Jesse Ventura interview I got to do about 3 weeks ago. I managed to rope him. He has a Substack as well, so I sent an email out to his base there, and surprisingly enough, he was going to be in Pittsburgh too, where I'm from. So it was a good opportunity for him to promote his appearance there. So I got to chat with him a little bit. We talked a little wrestling. We talked a lot of politics. But it was a very fruitful and fun conversation. He was engaged, and you know, I never expected to be interviewing Ventura, so it was pretty cool. So that's what you'll see latest. And then the other two articles, one's an older article that I have about Bruno Sammartino. My first shift at WrestleZone, it was my first paid gig. I ended up, Bruno Sammartino, who's hometown hero in Pittsburgh here, passed away, and I was just early on in my shift, and that was one of my big first posts. That was the biggest post I've ever written, probably, was his passing. So, and I just recount that time that happened, and then I did a feature piece on Terry Funk to start everything off, who's really great, and I've grown to love the more knowledgeable I get about pro wrestling. So those are the three you'll see right now.
Let me guess, Jesse hates both parties.
Yes, correct. That is correct.
Some things never change.
Yes. So that was definitely it. So
he's quite the character. He was my governor for a while there.
That's right. I was thinking about that.
Yeah. The funny thing is, people have asked, like, did you vote for Jesse? It's the one time I didn't vote, and I had every intention of voting. And I was at the Torch at the time, and it was Tuesday, so it was deadline, and it just ended up going, it was a crazy day. I don't remember what all was happening, probably the Jesse stuff and then whatever else, and I just never got a chance. So it's like the one time I didn't vote, so I can honestly say I did not vote for Jesse Ventura.
How about that? The irony and serendipity of it all at once.
And you know what? I would have, just to send a message, but I think like a lot of people the next day was like, wait, he won? Really? And yeah, it was an interesting time with Jesse as governor. I'll leave it at that. We'll spare the listener at the political chat for today. I do want to back up with you before we dive into current events. So you've kind of listed some of the places that you've worked for over the years. You started with the Torch. How old were you? And just you know, kind of take me through the progression. And how old are you now?
Sure. So I'm 38 now. When I subscribed to the Torch, just as like a listener, or no, I'm sorry, I didn't subscribe to it for a little bit, but I did start listening around, I believe it was 2010. And I lived in Philadelphia at the time. And I remember, it's so funny because I remember being like, okay, I know a lot about wrestling. I think I know my, you know, and I'm pretty well aware of everything. But listening to you and Wade talk on Tuesdays and then certain interviews that he would do. And then when I went behind the paywall and started listening to his like audio with Bruce Mitchell and then all the other content that they offered and eventually Todd Martin, I realized I did not know enough about what I was really interested in with wrestling. And so like, I remember my whole thought process on how a story should be told. And like, I thought before that, I thought it was a brilliant idea to have AJ Styles be like Ric Flair and everything like that. And so I'm just like, wow, okay. I had a lot to learn. So, going into that, eventually I just got really interested in just, you know, the analysis that came with it all, the thought process that came in the conversations, whether it be interviews or the live audio and stuff. And it was just something I've really, really wanted to be a part of. And so I would contribute questions like, you know, that fans do and stuff. And then eventually I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to start sending Wade maybe some stuff that if I write, you know, he made a Game of Thrones reference. And then I wrote something that, like tied in with Kevin Owens in Game of Thrones at the time that I thought was very appropriate. And Wade really liked that and he started using it. So once in a great while, I would send Wade content that I was able to write out when I had the opportunity. That was around 2015 it ended up being. And then, okay. And then I started doing the podcast recaps for The Torch, where I would listen to whether Pat McNeil's or other podcasts or that would just give you a succinct writing recap of it all. So I've done that. And then eventually I moved to Pittsburgh, started working at Whole Foods. The Post Gazette editor came through my line and book editor, and I brought up, he mentioned, I was like, you work for the Post Gazette? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, well, are you guys doing interns? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, well, I'm not a student. He's like, well, we don't do those kind. He's like, but you do book reviews. Like, I've done podcast recaps. And so he started bringing in books for me to review at Whole Foods. And so once I started doing that, I started getting published on the website and then eventually the newspaper. And then I wanted to get back into wrestling. And so I dug up the WrestleZone where they were like paid opportunities, but I just did volunteer work for a while. And then that's kind of how it all started off and started kicking going. And then, you know, squatting and going to certain places at StarCast and stuff. I got to be friends with Conrad Thompson and got work through him and just a lot of networking kind of thing. So it all kind of branched out from there. It's been wild. It's been fun. And now I sit in with like I said, Click This Podcast and the others and interact with everybody. And it's been a neat thing. You learn a lot about the business and different realms of it as a fan and then, you know, kind of as a writer and balancing it all out with it. And I was thankful, too, because I have a journalism degree, too. So all that kind of going into play kind of gave me a good little basis of how to handle myself in a lot of ways, too. So it's been a fascinating run so far, Jason.
Yeah, that's awesome. Talk to me about – so you have a journalism degree. And
yes.
I'm not judging when I say that. I want to preface that up front. I'm not coming at you in any way. Talk about the decision to work with companies that at one time that was kind of considered an absolute no-no. Like you are an independent party covering a whatever business it is, and you don't work directly for them. Now, again, so many things have changed over the years. So did you wrestle with that at all, or was it just, that's just kind of the way things are now?
You know what? I really did in certain aspects, especially like part of me like was when I had the degree I did afterwards, I was doing graphic design work in Philly, and I remember applying for like a social media job back for WWE. But I also was just like, you know, how can I kind of walk that line of being, you know, fair and being, you know, forthright and, you know, not having to, you know, withhold or anything to that effect where it comes in. And so when it comes to certain things, it gave me pause to think about it. But then I was just like, you know, as long as I do my jobs and respective things, I'm forthright as I can be with people. I should be able to balance this. And, you know, if people have that certain thought about, you know, why are you in the business, like kind of from a company standpoint in comparison to that, then yeah, I would probably in a lot of ways, if that opportunity came, I would put away my journalism hat. But I think being in that aspect of the journalism realm of like, hey, I'm still writing, I'm still doing this thing, and it's something that I really, really like about it, is I'm not a type of person to kind of like kowtow in certain regards when it comes to things. So I think I was kind of born that way, for better or for worse. I got that from my father. So it's kind of like so there is kind of that thing about, no, I don't like, I'm a cynic in a lot of hearts, but I'm also an optimist. So it kind of comes in the realm of like, all right, I like what I'm doing. If a good opportunity arises, I would do it, but I would not dispose of who I was or what I'm about. You know what I mean? So I hope that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Have you run into any issues? I mean, just being in covering the industry as long as I have, I've had sources over the years that they think if they are talking to you, somehow that gives them a free pass. And I've had, you know, I've lost sources and even people that I would consider friendly, you know, that I was friendly with, because they just couldn't wrap their, but we talk and I can't believe you wrote this about me. It's like, well, because that's my job. Have you encountered any of that yet?
You know, not confrontational wise. I have encountered stuff where I've been told things, and you know, it's either been like I have to make it clear that you got to be off record, or that you know, in certain aspects of it too, I'll be like, okay, well, you know, it is a balance of that. So like, if I, for example, like if something were to happen at a show, whether it be an MLW show or maybe like an ad-free shows event or something, and I hear something, I kind of weigh it out in a lot of ways. I don't necessarily, I won't report it because there's a matter of trust, I think, but
sure.
There, you know, if somebody, and like, you want to build, it is a balance too, Jason, to be honest, like, cause it's like, you do, you know, it's kind of, you know, when to pick and choose your fights. If there was a moment, I will say this, I forgot about this. There was a moment where a talent, came up to me and was like, hey, are you able to kind of report something about this if I tell you this? And it wasn't necessarily accurate. And I was like, I can't do that.
Right.
I was like, you know, I was like, I can say something that, you know, but if I cannot outright say something that's not true or anything to that effect, you know? So that did happen. I remember there wasn't any pressure to do it or anything to that effect, but they asked me and I was like, no, I'm not going to do that just to make somebody look better or anything to that effect, you know, or to make a situation better for that party or whatever. So yeah, there's been little encounters. I don't think I've reached to the level where I reach out, and there is certain times where I'll reach out to get reports or sources and stuff like that. But I'm not super into that at this point in time. So like, it's something I want to get more involved with is the reporting side of things. But I also figure, like, you know, a lot of people are doing that too. And to try to make interesting content that stands out, you know, something like the Substack, I'm hoping is something that, you know, kind of makes a little difference. But it's always an interest of mine too, to get involved in that, because I do like the journalism side of things.
Well, how about from a company standpoint? Like, if you had to review an MLW show or mm-hmm. Conrad promoted Ric Flair's final match, and I don't know if you have reviewed either one of them, but if you had to, I mean, is it a conversation you have with them ahead of time? Like, hey, you know, we may have a working relationship, but just know I'm calling this as I see it.
Yeah, so I have on WrestleZone, I used to do a little bit of a show where I would recap MLW and I'd go over it. Now, for the most part, I like what MLW does. Like, I think the way they present things, and that it being an hour long, and there's a lot of things that you can really take away from it. So there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities that I really did criticize for them. Now, and I never, you know, if there was a certain thing that came up, I would never give a heads up or anything like that. It would just be like, you know, I am a writer. I am a journalist, like, quote unquote, journalist, to how you ever want to label a lot of wrestling writers today. So it's just like, yeah, part of it is giving your opinion and going from that. And I know, too, like, Conrad's the type of person, too. If I were to say something or mention, give my opinion on something, it wouldn't. There's so many different things that it's just like he would not it wouldn't matter to him, or, you know, even sure. And even if it did, he knows the relationship that, you know, he knows when he met me, he knew I was just, you know, hey, this guy works for the Dirt Sheets. So it kind of, so there's a good relationship there too. So, I kind of have full confidence if that would come into play, it would just be like, I'm not getting compromised, and I'm not, you know, I'm not bashing somebody to bash somebody or to get my name out there. I'm not doing it for ill intent or anything to that effect.
No stupid hot takes.
Right. Exactly. No dumb hot takes that are just like, hey, pay attention to me.
Yeah.
I hope in the long grand scheme of things, that'll be, you know, my work might stand out and, you know, just keep my nose down and clean and all that stuff. And, you know, just report what I feel and give my opinion when it matters, when I think it matters.
I'm all for, if you have a strong opinion, my God, please express it. But I just see, not even so much in wrestling media, I mean, a little bit here and there, but just sports media, just the hot take approach. Like, you can just tell this isn't what they feel. Or ESPN kind of became, they jacked up the ratings doing it, but it was just so obvious. Okay, you take this side of the argument, I'll take the other, and we'll argue about it on the air for 10 minutes. And it was just so phony, and yet it worked for them. I just can't stand that stuff.
I can't either, too. There's a certain type of, you know, and even back, you know, I was a big fan. This is kind of funny, a little off topic, but I was in freshman year in college. I was in one of my communication courses. And a part of our assignment was you have to interview somebody in the business. So I was like, oh, man, I really freaking love, I love Around the Horn. I love it. And so it was, that was what I wanted to do when I started off, too. So I was like, I'm going to see if I can get a hold of Woody Page from Around the Horn. And so, sure enough, I found the Denver Post phone number. I give a call. I leave a message. I remember being in my dorm room sleeping and wake up from a phone call. I'm in my underwear. I'm sorry if I don't, you can't swear on
it. Oh, you're fine.
But I go, okay, I go over. I answer the phone, which is a landline. The phone cord falls through my laundry bar on the door. And so I grab the phone, and here it's Woody Page. And so I don't want to lose the connection. So I'm laying on my floor in my underwear interviewing Woody Page about being a sports writer. And, you know, he told me that he wasn't a sports fan. And I was like, do I believe that? I was like, he's like, I just like writing and stuff. And basically, and it was very casual conversation. And, you know, I left it feeling like, man, was he just trying to not get me involved in sports writing? Or did he have different intentions? Because even now, I don't think he was being totally forthright with me.
How do you get into sports writing if you're not a sports fan? I can see like falling out of love with sports.
Yeah, maybe that was it, because it was just like, how do you feel about that? I was like, you don't like sports? I was like, that makes no sense. Why? If you're making money, but, you know, so it was like, it didn't necessarily disenchant me from it, because, you know, it was like, wow, cool. Okay. I talked to Woody Page, and I'm just like an 18-year-old snot that's like trying to make my way and learn about sports writing. But it ended up like, you know, it kind of put a little bit of thought process, I think, moving forward on certain things. But I'm just like, how do you not be invested in stuff like this? It's just like, that's what I, you know, it's the balance of working, having a dream job is doing what you love and writing about what you love if you're into writing. So I don't know.
Yeah, that just, I mean, I totally get there's going to be people that enter a newsroom and they're assigned to something that they may not, right. Maybe their thing isn't politics, but they get assigned to it. That happens. But to become a successful sports columnist at some point or another. That guy loves sports. I don't care what he says. He may not now, but he did.
Even at that age, I was like, you can't be serious. I was like, how do you not?
Well, let's talk about Dynamite. You were there on Wednesday night in Pittsburgh. You need to settle something for me, because I know that I'm going to hear about it if I don't bring this up, from Tony Donofrio. You may remember him from The Torch.
All right, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, so I have this ongoing thing, and it's I'm sincere about this. I haven't noticed it with AEW. Is it just me, or when it comes to mostly WWE events, is Pittsburgh a really tough town when it comes to getting the crowd engaged?
Jason, I mean, it is a tough town. It's a very tough town, and I almost feel like secondhand embarrassment when I go to those, because sometimes that the crowds are so dull, or like, and you're like thinking, "Jesus, Bruno Sammartino fucking worked here." You know what's going on? You know, it's just like we should be representing one of the best wrestling cities there can be. But so many times I would go to shows and there would be just like this listlessness to it. And like, hey, are you guys even fans of wrestling or what is it? But I will say now, from what I heard, Dynamite on television did sound dead. Am I correct in that?
Oh, I didn't think it was bad. I mean, we've seen livelier crowds for AEW, but it never stood out to me. Like there have been just some WWE shows over the years, especially where I'm like, wow, what's wrong with this crowd? I remember one time it was like after a big Pittsburgh Steelers loss. And so I kind of got it. I think it was a pay-per-view and they'd lost that day. And I'm like, oh, well, I get it to a point. But yeah, there's just been so many times it's like, why is this crowd quiet? Oh yeah, Pittsburgh. And it's not the only town. And I'm not picking on Pittsburgh because, hell, my town gave Undertaker the what treatment?
Oh my gosh.
I think the only time in his career.
Well, we had the Iron Man match. I want to say it was between Seth Rollins and maybe Dolph. That sounds weird, but I don't know if that's accurate. But I remember the countdown clock when it was the counting. All the fans were counting down. It was just pure disrespect to like the wrestlers in the ring, and I was just like, oh, I'm embarrassed by this too. It's just like, but Dynamite this week, I went there with my brother, and the crowd was hot. Like it was really, and we even made a note like, hey, this is pretty packed in comparison to, you know, the times we've been there before. And the crowds were pretty decent the times before, but we were both mentioned how energetic the crowd was and hot it was to start off the show. And I would say that lasted till about the end of the Wardlow match. So the crowd was, if it didn't come across on television, that wasn't the case. And it was, for a Pittsburgh crowd, it was super hot. And like the crowd was super into it. And you could, and the fans outside, there was a lot of fans out there. Like the line, granted, now the line in the Peterson Event Center was not very well orchestrated, but it was around the block in the back. And then there was a bunch of people out front too. So there were fans there. I will say that about AEW, like their attendance and things like that. The fan base that goes to show up to show, they're motivated. And so it wasn't any different in Pittsburgh this time around. But so
the more I think of it, what? Because he had Britt Baker there, hometown. And so, yeah, there's just something I think AEW does. You just watch these shows, and not every show, but it does seem like they draw a louder fan base, more passionate when they're there oftentimes. Again, not every show. Yeah. And I do think, the more I think back on it, Pittsburgh would be included in that. So yeah, it is just a tougher town for some of those WWE events for whatever reason. But for this show, I was down on it. I didn't dislike everything about the show, obviously, but it just, boy, what happened with the main event? Was that easy to follow in the building? We're having a three-man tournament and just everything they did?
We understood it, I think. I will say I was not, so I left probably about after the Commander match.
Okay.
But the setup for it, with MJF and everything, it made sense, but it just also like, yeah, I understood it, but I didn't necessarily, wasn't like, okay, that's kind of weird. It was a three-person tournament.
Like, yes. That's it.
Like what is that kind of thing, you know? And I will say too, for the opening segment, I liked that they gave those guys the opportunity to talk on the mic, but it almost felt like it should not have been on a Dynamite. It should have been on if they did it, like it should have been on like a lower platform show, but even darker elevation or something like that is not even an appropriate platform. If they had a lower, better platform, that's what it should have been on. It shouldn't have been on this, because you know, as there's hints, there's like little embers of talent in these guys' speaking ability, I think. But for that main platform at that time, it didn't work, I don't think. And it went a little too long-winded.
I've liked Darby throughout most of this build to whatever they're doing, whether they go back to the four-way or they really do stick with the tournament. And it's one person. This week, I was pretty down. I thought Perry's been solid, maybe even a little better than I thought, but I think Darby's the one that stood out in the best way possible. Sammy is just, I just have a hard time seeing a guy that is in a faction named after someone else being a threat to win the championship. And he's just all over the place. Okay, we know you worked at a fast food place or two. It happened, Sammy. You're not the only one. And this week he didn't bring it up, to his credit. But what I didn't like about the segment was the way they basically told their crowd indirectly, you need to choose between Jack Perry and Darby Allin. Going into that,
right.
I didn't think you did. And they're just sitting there tearing each other down in a way where I just didn't think made either one of them look good.
No, and it seemed to your point, it seemed like shoehorned in or, you know, forced, where it's just like, what, dude, I like Darby. Like him coming out and like the reaction all those guys got, like Jungle Boy, you know, the crowd was going all out with the song and everything like that. And then when Darby came out, it was good. Sammy got a lot of heat coming out. But yeah, with Darby, it just felt very weird in what he was saying. And it felt uncharacteristic almost. And it seemed like they needed to give Jungle Boy a reason to like kind of hate on him in a lot of ways, where it's just like, you know, I get that Darby's like a recluse and kind of standoffish. I never got the idea that it was like, you know, he was who Jungle Boy was describing necessarily. It just kind of all felt a little bit, you know, it didn't really click with me. And I'm intrigued by the Pillars kind of aspect of it all going on and everything like that. I just don't necessarily know too. Is it for maybe if it's a four way, it would be intriguing for Double or Nothing. But if it's a singles match between any of those guys, it doesn't seem like that huge of a deal.
I have a hard time with Sammy being in there again, because I just think they don't have to make him the person who's pinned. But when you just look at the match, like, oh, Sammy's getting pinned. I just don't see him being the guy. And it's not that he can't get there long term. And some of it is just being in a second man at best in a faction. But I do think they can build up Darby, but they need to do it and really stick to it. And it needs to start with this week's show, him winning, beating Sammy, and then really just be aggressive in building toward Darby and MJF. I don't think the other two will draw as a pay-per-view match. I think no matter what, they're in kind of a tough spot, because it's still very early in MJF's title reign. And I mean, I didn't think that Danielson was going to beat him, and I don't think the masses did either, because it was so early. And even though a little more time has passed, I just don't think the fans are going to anticipate seeing a title change, no matter who it is.
No, I agree with you there too. And I think to your point, I think Darby would be the most viable contender to have in a singles match with him at that pay-per-view. And like, it's tough because you can create something there, I think, and build something there. But still, if you take a step back and you look at the grand scope of AEW and what they've done for Double or Nothing, it doesn't seem like it's as hot. And I even told my brother that at the time, too, even going to the show. It was like, AEW just doesn't seem to pack the biggest impact as it is. I think they're still reeling. I think they will always be reeling in a certain way from losing Cody. And then when it comes to, on top of that, just the whole CM Punk situation, where you do see it, like if you're looking at the ratings and stuff like that, you see the effect that it's taken on the show. Like where that's a clear delineation of like these numbers were when Punk was here and here they are when they aren't. And they need to correct course in a lot of ways, but it seems to be growing and certain problems that they're getting that I don't know if that makes sense, but I feel Double or Nothing needs to, I don't know. It needs something to really heat it up a little bit more than what they're presenting.
Yeah, I'm with you. You said you were there through the Commander and Jay White match?
Correct, yep. Mm-hmm.
So how did the crowd respond to Jay White during his entrance? And did you feel like coming out of the match, they looked at him any differently? Were they, was it a moment for Jay White?
No, I would say it wasn't a moment. I like Jay White a lot, and I like his look, and I think he's got great mic work. But we didn't see any of that. You know, we saw, you know, him compete with this younger star that did a lot of wild stuff that really could catch the eye and everything like that. And so, after Wardlow won the title and, you know, Arn was there, which was great. I thought Arn was a show stealer. his promo backstage, checkers to chess. I was like, damn, Arn still got it. And it's just like, yeah, so, but going back to Jay, he was like secondary in the match. I feel like a lot of people, I think from what I heard too, just sitting in the crowd, some of these people didn't, my brother didn't know who Commander was. He's not a super ardent fan and into things, but he works in the business, but he's not super aware of other people and stuff. But, and then, you know, but he was the Commander. He's the one that kind of stood out, I think, to the fans. But I will also say that I don't think the crowd was super duper invested into the matches. Maybe they were with the Britt Baker, you know, obviously, or Wardlow, or, you know, the beginning. You could kind of feel things settling down a little bit at that point. So I can't speak to necessarily how the crowd was reacting later on in the show, but up until the Wardlow match is where it was hot. And this is kind of where it's a lot. Yeah, I think Jay White, I think with so many of these talents that they have, it's so important to, like, give us a few weeks with them, like,
yes,
on like a whether it's a video package or whether it's certain things like that. I don't care. Like, there's so many times where it's like, I did think like the opening segment was a little long-winded and everything like that, but Marcus is my brother. He was like, they're taking up a lot of TV time with this, and I was like, yeah, but in my head, I'm thinking I'm okay with it if it's good, you know, because that's kind of what I'm more invested in the story, and I don't think AEW tells enough of a story. And for these younger stars and talent that they're introducing, it's like, give them their moments. And your roster is so bloated, I understand you want to put everybody on there, but you got to balance the business with the goodwill that you have among the roster and everything like that. So Jay White is, yeah, I think he's a great talent, but I think everybody's getting lost in the shuffle right now. And I don't think anybody's necessarily safe from it, maybe with the exception of like MJF, who stands out because of his promos.
Well said. And the Jay White Commander thing to me, I just sat there baffled. I'm like, it's Jay White. I know he's a star from New Japan. I've seen it. I always enjoy Jay White's work. Thought he was one of the best heels in the business. But there mm-hmm. is an audience out there that is watching this show that is not, they're not super fans. They may not know who Jay White is. Maybe they've heard of him. Make everyone understand what it is that makes him special. Don't introduce Commander essentially at the same time. I mean, I know he's been on TV a couple of times before that. But you don't have to have Jay White against Commander. Give Jay White a spotlight mm-hmm. match. And for the love of God, don't have Sean Spears sitting in the crowd doing his thing on top of it. It's like, it was, how do we, I seriously would have guessed, like, the goal going into this creatively was, how do we find ways to take attention away from Jay White?
Right, right. No, because it just seems like that you have that guy come in, and he did establish himself as like a Bullet Club leader and in New Japan, and was like this kind of fresh new face coming into to the fold of everything. And even in Impact, you know, he got plenty of time to kind of talk and showcase him. Impact has done a better job at positioning Jay White than what AEW has done at this juncture. And I think, yeah, the oversaturation of talent that you have. And you know, it's interesting because Marcus and I, my brother, we did a show called AEW 2 Dynamite Dudes on WrestleZone, and it was a weekly show, and it was a lot of fun to do. And like, we're huge advocates, and I still am a huge advocate of AEW and want it to succeed and grow. But it came to a point in time where we would create these speculations. Oh, what if they sign Cesaro? Or what if, you know, Samoa Joe goes there? All the different possibilities that come there. But then now you see them, and it's almost like you have to think to remember that they're there. And I think that's a huge issue. It's such a huge issue.
They're about to get, everyone assumes, you know, it's not official until it's official, two more hours on Saturday night. AEW Collision, it's expected to be called. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, it's going to help with what you're talking about, but overall, is this a positive or a negative beyond just the added revenue that AEW gets? I mean, at one time, WCW Thunder made that company a lot of money, and it turned out to be a horrible thing for them.
You know, that is very tough, and I think the way it can be a positive for them is you have to really delineate who's on what show. I think you need to really separate it, and you need to hone down and focus and make these stars feel like stars, because a lot of them are swimming upstream against that. So if you're blending it in like they're kind of doing with ROH, where you have these AEW talents coming into that show and then wrestling on that, you know, card, and then you have you know, all this transition stuff over and over again, it's not going to mean anything. I don't tape. I don't record DVR Rampage. You know, if something comes up, I'll try to make an effort to maybe watch it. But it's been forever since I've seen a Rampage, because I don't miss it. Like, it's just not on my list. I got other stuff to do, and so But yeah, I think a third show now, if they focus and make this really segmented and have position it so you have a few talent that are on there, and that this is their show. You have to do the same with Dynamite too. Structurally, it's going to take a lot of work. And I really don't think Tony Khan can be the sole booker of AEW, because it's like you have so many minds there. Why not delegate a lot of this work to other talent, people in the business who've been there longer and that know what they're doing? You have these minds like a Jake the Snake Roberts or an Arn Anderson or heck, a Tony Schiavone, or, you know, even younger guys like a Matt Hardy and, you know, Jericho to kind of help out or do certain things. It's just like, utilize these talents' minds and just maybe giving creative input on their segments or their stuff or how that goes. You make the most of what you have, and it doesn't seem like Tony Khan's going to do that. I hope he's kind of more opt to a little bit more criticism and maybe a little bit more tough love. Oh, Jeff Jarrett's another name that I forgot to mention, but it's just like you have these guys that can make your product better and that can kind of streamline it a little bit more, because Dynamite's not streamlined. Rampage is not streamlined. Any of these shows are not streamlined. And that's been the major issue. Could be good. The third show could very well be good, but you have to really focus and hone in. I don't know if Tony Khan's going to do that or not.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you feel like if they get the other 2 hours that Tony will make these changes, or is it, this is how he books? It's not that they have, I mean, they do have more wrestlers than they need. I don't care what anyone says. They just do. Is it just Tony likes the chaotic approach of cramming as many people as he can onto these shows, cramming as many matches as he can on these shows, having minimal storylines and minimal promos? Not that there's no stories, because there are. Or if they get this extra 2 hours, do you really think we'll see a change even on Dynamite, because he won't feel the pressure to just cram so many people on? I don't know what the answer here is, Dominic.
That's a great point. Like, because it is like, I think a lot of it is that concern for Tony Khan. I think he's a very considerate person. I think he loves the people that work for him and everything like that. From several talents, you hear how much they like him, and that is the thought process, you know, that he has, and the willingness to have input. You also hear stuff that he's hard to get a hold of sometimes, though, too. And so it's just like, or to directly connect with him on certain things. But I think maybe it will give him pause. I hope it does, to realize that, hey, I have these extra 2 hours that I can kind of loosen up. I think he's been worried about fitting a whole bunch of talent on the card to give them, you know, their certain moment in the spotlight and everything like that. I think that is an aspect of it. But I also think maybe he's in that whole world of AEW, but he's not really thinking outside of the box of like, hey, this is how maybe these things should be booked and things like that. And it's just, I think it's just very head scratching that you don't hear that a lot of these minds that he has maybe backstage don't get as much say or input or help, you know, that they could maybe really have invaluable help to. Because I think at this point, if things were to go at least at the 80% level of what a good wrestling company should be doing, that they would be really not – it's hard to be at the throat of WWE at this point, but – in the running much better than they are at this juncture, you know?
Yeah.
So I think there's certainly some growing pains with having a company, obviously, like anybody can be like, hey, I think I could book this way better than somebody else can than this billionaire is doing. And maybe to an extent, maybe there's some of that, but I think Tony's very smart. I think what I do like about him too, is he does pay homage to those legends at certain points in time. I think that just all gets lost in the shuffle, and he focuses on what he focuses, and then other things just don't go that way. But it was a huge criticism I had of Vince McMahon, and I thought maybe that was not going to be the case here, but it seems to be the case here, unfortunately.
so you weren't there the whole night, but I'm guessing you know people who were. How long did this go with the everything else they end up taping before and after the show?
Well, so I didn't. I haven't really talked to anybody that's been okay. That was there for the whole show. I do have a couple. I did see some friends there, but I haven't touched base about it with them afterwards. I do know from the previous. There was an hour taping beforehand of ROH, and then they did Rampage afterwards. I do think. What was it? Something that I saw the ending angle after the fact with Adam Cole and Britt Baker and the Jericho Appreciation Society. I don't know how it was live. Obviously, when I saw it there, it didn't feel as impactful as I thought it was going to, you know. But as far as how long it ran and what they thought about the length of it after the end, I'm not too sure on that.
So it sounds like it was approximately a 4-hour show. If you said an hour before.
Yeah. I would say yes. And like when they'd been to Pittsburgh beforehand, you know, they would do the Elevation and Dark tapings, and then they would do Rampage before, and that would run about 4 hours. And so going into that, you know, we kind of figured that's what it would have been. But I knew Marcus had to do his social media work, and I had to get a little bit more work done. So we had to scoot a little bit early. But what we saw, I've been to the other shows in Pittsburgh, so the first Rampage, and then when they had Dynamite there before, they had Dustin Rhodes fighting CM Punk the one time, and that was a great match. But it just everything. I think it's just the absence of some of those talents, where it's just like losing Cody. I think was a gut shot that still lingers, especially because he's at the top of the card in WWE now, and then with Punk not being there, there's just a hole there where you don't have an AEW ambassador. It seems like you could obviously a huge argument is Jericho, but it's just like. Somebody that's moving you forward too, and as a present talent that's not just a certain legacy star. Like Jericho still has a lot of value, obviously, and contributes a whole lot, and is basically an ambassador, but it doesn't have that identity that kind of Cody associated with it. And Punk also, you know, I don't think he would have fit that category as an ambassador either, but he was definitely a big star. So it just seems so many of these talents just seem a little less than even than they were in WWE. I think with the exception of Moxley, Jericho, and Jeff Hardy, I think, you know, those guys when Jeff Hardy was there at his height too for AEW, I think that he was a lot better, well positioned, you know, felt like a bigger deal. But any of these other WWE talent, I was just thinking about this before our conversation. It was like it doesn't seem like they're getting, you know, as much attention as they did even in WWE, who weren't you really utilizing them all that well either.
So I do want to back up. 4 hours for a wrestling show. Too much?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Not for big deals, I think. Not for maybe like if you're going to do a pay-per-view that's like maybe,
sure.
You know, that kind of thing. I think that's okay. WrestleMania broken up into the way it was, I think, was perfect. But not as a card overall, but just as a matter of time frame. But I think, yeah. Oh, if you're going by a weekly wrestling show that has all this stuff, 4 hours is pretty long.
It really is. You know, I went to Full Gear 2021, and they had the Rampage tapings the night before, I believe it was. Yeah, I think the show itself was on a Saturday. And back then, there were no Ring of Honor, and so it was just Dark Elevation tapings that led up to the Rampage. And it was fun for the first 45 minutes to an hour, you know, just to see some people, the you know, various matches and the stars in the matches, and then a couple of local favorites that were doing jobs that night, whatever. And then that second hour was like, oh boy, this is still going. And then Rampage itself is Rampage. And it's like, oh, it was my first time attending, and so I had a good time. But I also know if I had bought tickets to that show, and Rampage came back, Dominic, I would not have paid money to go see that a second time. There's no way.
Right. No, I think that kind of plays into the aspect of too, like nobody really feels like a big deal. Like it's, but outside of your like certain stars that have positioned themselves, like an MJF or obviously a Punk or, you know, Omega at a time, I think was there too. Like, especially when he was on his cokehead kind of quote unquote, a championship run where he's just like this manic guy. I think that it was great and stuff. But outside of that, it's just like, all right, I'm here. there's some good wrestling going on, a lot of athleticism, but it's not really like sticking with me because I'm seeing it every match and I'm seeing certain things go down. It's, yeah, I think that's part of the aspect of it too. And if you're not delivering on it, you're not making something seem significant, then it's not, everything's just going to, you know, flow together in a not entertaining way sometimes.
Is that a bit of Tony's weakness, is that he thinks every wrestling fan or the majority of wrestling fans are super fans, like he, you know, clearly is and was, where he's just, I remember one of his early quotes and I just was taken aback by it. I don't, it was a media session or something when he was talking about wrestling shows on holidays and wrestling fans don't take holidays off. And I'm like, yeah, some of us like to, I don't need to think about wrestling on Christmas Eve or, you know, what, fill in the holiday, but he's just such a super fan. I just worry that that's how he sees his audience. And yes, you're getting those fans, but I just worry, Dom, that when all said and done, if you just cater to that fan base, that's the fan base you're going to get, and that fan base only. And there's only so many of them.
I agree. I think that's, you know, I think Tony is such a big fan, and it's cool to see, because like, that's what, like, if you have somebody that's running a wrestling company, you think that's the way to go. And in a lot of ways, that is what you want. You want to have somebody that honors the business and thinks about that and thinks about the history and brings in like a Greg Valentine to sit at ringside, or, you know, a Dory Funk or Ricky Steamboat, or, you know, and you want that. That lineage to still continue on and everything. So there's that aspect of being that super fan is such a beneficial aspect. But there's also the thing where if you're seeing this, these talent, and not only that, but you're on good terms with all these talent, and you're having, you're getting to utilize in the fashion that you want to, I think you get caught in your own bubble and you get caught into what you think people will like and everything like that. But it's just like, I always go back just to that veteran aspect that's back there. It's just like, I would like to think if I was in that position, I would take a step back and be like, I got to listen to these guys. You know, I got to listen to how this stuff should be executed and what I really need to hone in on the little details. I'm having fun. I'm loving all the action that I'm seeing. But, you know, this might not appeal to your casual fan that's trying to tune in and seeing what's going on, that wants, you know, the storyline of a, you know, to a, something to a bloodline level, or even to the pinnacle level at that, not the pinnacle, the pillar level that we're seeing here. So, I think he gets a little, I think he has a tendency to get wrapped up in the fandom of it all, and find that this is what he likes. And if you look at these announcements that's been going on, obviously Wembley is a big announcement.
Yeah.
But is Wembley a big announcement that you want to tell to everybody that you promote beforehand, that is only going to cater to a certain audience that can attend it live? You know, that was a big announcement. But when I heard it, I was like, it's not going to affect me. It's not going to affect anybody in the States unless they take a huge plane ticket over there to go see it.
Or if they make it a pay-per-view or a live special, but they didn't announce that.
They didn't announce anything to that effect. And so, and even that is something that you have to wait for a while. And it's something that you have to, that's coming down the line. So sure, it's a big announcement, but I think that's a big announcement that could have been given in a press release and not promoted on television. You can make the announcement too on television, but don't promote it beforehand as a big announcement that you're going to see on TV from your boss. So it kind of gets to that Dixie Carter standpoint of things sometimes, I think.
Yeah. You know, and it is just the super fan in him that I think, to him, why wouldn't you want to go to one of my shows for 4 hours? Why wouldn't you want a 6-hour wrestling pay-per-view? Of course I'm going to just jam-pack the pre-show with 4 matches so the pay-per-view feels even longer, because that's what he likes. And hey, I was just as critical of WWE when they were holding ridiculously long pay-per-views for God knows what reason. It was like, would you stop and leave people wanting more once in a while? And they just didn't. And now they finally are again. And I think Tony, if he starts to do that, I think he may not enjoy it as much, but I think he's going to attract more fans if he does. And I just think there's a happy medium here. I'm not saying you just scale everything back to just being Dynamite when you go there. You can tape other shows, but I guess let me ask, where does Ring of Honor fit in? Is there, especially if they get another 2 hours, is there a place, is there a need for Ring of Honor?
I mean, if I was Tony, I would replace Rampage with Ring of Honor. I don't know if that's an option for them. But I mean, like the ratings are just not good for Rampage. And if you have them strictly on the Honor Club, it doesn't. Those stars don't seem like stars. Like it's like, I love Cesaro. I Claudio now, but I mean, like he was somebody that I was like, oh, could you imagine if AEW got a hold of him? Like just positioning him as like this world Luthez defending world champion that has this kind of attitude and stuff like that. But he's the ROA champion, which is cool. But it's like, is that a big deal? Because we don't see it. You know, you have to go out of your way to go watch ROH, and so I think. Going from there, I think if you're getting a second AEW show Collision, then I think you want to utilize this brand opportunity to kind of build ROH and then maybe have an Honor Club where you have these certain special matches, but really present a story and a show and a tight roster on there on your program every Saturday night at 10 p.m. if that's the time slot you're going to continue with. But yeah, I think that's where it should. Is that where it's going to go? I don't know. I hope so. And to your point too, Jason, you were saying, you know, how tightening up the product and everything like that. We were talking about baseball beforehand off air and how the rules have changed to make the games quicker and everything like that. And it's probably a shock to the system of the players, certainly. But I was at the Pirates game last night, and it was a pleasant surprise to kind of sit there. Dollar Dog Night, granted, was there, so that was a added incentive. But there was also the game lasted from 6:30 and ended at 9:00. And it was quick game, fun game. And I told Jim, my buddy Jim, I was like, hey, I want to go back to tonight if you're game for it. And he's like, let's do it. And we're Pirates fans, so we've been disenchanted. We're like the abused wife that's like been, you know, how many 30 years here since they've had a decent run for a while. So it's getting to that point where it's just like, hey, they're actually pretty good. They're 13-7. These games are nice and short. It's entertaining. Let's go. And so I think the same benefit Tony can find with that. And I also say this too, that I think the reason I'm willing to be this critical too of AEW is because WWE back then, you know, when they didn't have competition, you had Vince McMahon running everything and you had, you know, him calling people up from NXT, and you would hope for the best for these talents down in NXT that they would get the opportunity to be a star on the main roster, and then they don't get utilized. And so you think of NXT as like, what's the point of rooting for them if this is going to be the end game for them? And I think Tony has unfortunately kind of cultivated a little bit of that identity, and I don't want to see that happen. It's just, you know, and to your point too, it's just like you're only going to reach a certain amount of an audience by doing that too. And it's something that needs to be corrected. Course needs to be corrected on, I think.
Well, going back to what you said about baseball, I mean, who's complaining about the times now? The purists. They have them.
Yeah.
They're going to be there. And if they fade away, hopefully there's going to be three more new fans that replace those purists.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's what you want. That you want to grow your audience. Sure, you want to adhere to the history of your sport or your genre, but you also want to build that audience and continue that legacy and make your current stars, like a Mike Trout, seem like a big deal. You know, where it's just like, is that to a level? You want them to be in the course of time to be a Mickey Mantle and stuff like that, where it's just like, oh, he was on the Angels. Well, who watches the Angels? Like, you got to go out of your way to watch the Angels. Well, hopefully, like, tighter stuff, and, you know, maybe the MLW will do a bit of a brand correction too, where MLB, I'm sorry, holy smokes, I'm all over the place. But MLB will do a little bit of course correction too, where it's like you position your stars in the right way and make them feel important. And maybe these shorter time spans and these opportunities for home runs and stolen bases and everything like that, with all the changes that they made, will help with that. And hopefully that can be the same. You want to transition that over to wrestling. And Tony Khan's a sports guy, so it's just like, you want to hope that he thinks about this stuff, but sometimes I don't think it's in the right intentions in a lot of ways. So
no, I think he actually has the right intention. He just doesn't realize that we're not all wired the same. And, there's things that I don't like, but I can see that the masses do. And it's like, well, then they're right. You know, the mass, you play to the masses, not to the individual or the smaller group. And I mean, it's his company. He can do it however he wants. But if he wants this thing to grow, like I think we both think he wants to, there's changes that he can make. One of those changes, you've mentioned his name a few times, CM Punk. What is your prediction if he does indeed return? Is this going to run smoothly? Is this going to end in disaster again?
That's a great... I mean, that's the never-ending question, it seems. It's like, I think if things are staying the way they are with the mind, something needs to change from a core standpoint of AEW for things to go swimmingly, I think. If that happens, I think things will be okay. But from how it started to where we're at now, it's just like you got to – it's very simple. Like I know it's tough to do because like Tony Khan likes both these camps and they've had their tensions and everything like that. But it's you sit these guys down. Okay, I've worked with people I haven't liked or that I don't think contribute or that I think are dumbheaded fucks or whatever.
Wade?
But I also
think – why did you got to say that about Wade?
Hey, listen, I plead the fifth on that. No, but there's been, it's like, that's life. That's what you do. And I'm trying to have a business here and make money. And CM Punk's a certified star. And you guys are stars in your own right, but you also have to balance that out too. And it's just have the meeting of the minds, cut the head off where it started off and move forward. It seems like something that should just be done, handled directly instead of like, hey, we're going to have this meeting. Let's have another meeting or let's get something set up. It's just like, get this thing executed, get these two camps together. Let's get down to business. If Punk, if you're not interested in doing this, then I'm sorry, we can't move on. We'll try to make something happen here, but you gotta all work in syncopation to make this product better, because Tony Khan is, I mean, I think Conan has said it on his podcast. Tony Khan straight out does not like WWE. Like he does not. He has this hatred and this animosity towards them. So, you know, he wants to compete with them and you know, he wants it to be a better company. So there is that's what, as like somebody that's, whether you're a writer or a fan, that's what you like to see, I think. So you want that, you know, competition to go that way, but you're not going to get there if you have all these speed bumps in the way of this little rinky-dink bullshit that, you know, that means nothing in the grand scheme of things when it comes to it. And it's only detrimental to your company. It's like you want history to not repeat itself and you want to learn from history. It's just, it seems like really arithmetic there, but I think again it goes to that bubble thing where you're all in it and you're trying to please everybody, and I don't know, it's a very difficult thing. So Punk coming back, I would love to see it work out and be okay, but there's going to be this time where it's like, I think these two entities are going to have to meet again. You know, it's in the same company and, you know, it's the elephant in the room kind of deal. So it's just like, you know, you have to, I think just the, word I'm looking for? Kind of just the whole heart and the whole mentality of how that the company operates needs to change fundamentally from that aspect.
I think Tony needs to put his foot down, and if he can't do that, if he doesn't like the confrontation, you know, again, everybody's wired differently, and if that's not his forte, he needs to hire someone to be that person for him that will let him save face, but also know that, hey, you know, this person means something, so don't come crying to me. When this person puts their foot down, everybody's going to have to listen. Vince McMahon had that over the years. I think Tony Khan, it would be fine if he did as well. And then with the Punk thing, you mentioned, you know, hey, Punk doesn't want to get to the table, then enough of this. And I think it's important to say it goes both ways, because if the idea is that, well, Punk is willing to talk and we, you know, there have been reports that Jericho is going to meet with him. There haven't been any reports that I've seen that the Elite are willing to sit down with him. And if I'm Tony Khan and I have EVPs that are saying, no, I won't do it, I would say, yes, you will. I'm sorry, but you know, if you want to continue to collect a check, there's nothing you don't have to enter this and make 100% peace, but you at least have to make the effort. And if they won't do that, I mean, I don't know what you do with them. I think it goes, and same thing for Punk. I think it goes both ways.
Absolutely, it does. And it's like, and you know, I think there's a little bit of, you know, when two sides of a story happen, there's a little, probably a little bit of truth to both of those aspects of the things that we're getting, like from all the gray areas and stuff. And so, but yeah, I mean, you want everybody to have that professional mindset when you're in this kind of business, because a lot of ways it's not like wrestling is such a unique animal that it's just a wild, wild business. And you have all these wild characters and all these creative personalities that are clashing with one another and, you know, wanting to get their spot and get their money and get all this certain aspects of the thing. But it's, when it comes down to it, it's a business. And that's, you said it in a way more succinct way than I did, is that, yeah, Tony Khan could have somebody to facilitate all this and to be the one that lays the hammer down and be like, listen, this bullshit's got to cut out. We're making business here. You guys don't have to like each other, but you got to work together. And that's the bottom line. That's it. So, yeah. I would hope that he maybe finds somebody that can do that, whether it's a Laurinaitis or whoever, I don't know, but it's just like, get somebody in there that's willing to take those kind of, that isn't afraid to hurt people's feelings and things like that. Because no, Tony doesn't have to be that. He doesn't have to be that. He could be the guy that somebody leans on or talks to or bends the ear of and listens to. But like, ultimately you need a decision maker there. And it seems like he's trying to please everybody and you can't please everybody.
No. And if it was going swimmingly, I'd be like, okay, he doesn't need a bad cop. But it's not.
Right.
You know, we've seen enough where, no, he could use a bad cop. And I would hope it's not John Laurinaitis, my God, after everything that, right, that's come out, right, about him. But there has to be somebody out there. Now, WWE, I'm going to have you back because we barely even spoke about them. But I did want to just, to wrap things up here, get your thoughts on the draft. Are you excited for this? It kind of feels like everybody goes where they want anyway. So what is this?
You know, I haven't given a whole lot of thought to the draft. I think, you know, and I think that's kind of been, I've been trained that way over the years of watching the WWE draft, because it's like, okay, it doesn't really matter. But I think it's going to have some significance this time around. You know, I think, you know, as long as, you know, everything, if Triple H is handling creatively, like as much as we hear he is, then I think things should be okay. And I think it will get that, like, okay, you're going to get that designation. Okay, this person's on SmackDown and we're not going to see a whole lot of crossover and certain things like that. I think it does provide a little bit of intrigue, just of the notion that, hey, there is this new creative element that's been going on over the course, and this is the first draft for that. So yeah, I think that's, it's something to kind of keep your eyes a little more on than usual, I would say, where, you know, in the past it's just been like, does this really matter, and what will this make sense? I think it has a much more better chance to make sense this time around.
I think it needs to start tonight with, you know, it being made clear, whether it's Levesque or somebody else, like, hey, when this draft happens, we're sticking to this time. You know, there's going to be firm brand splits, and here's the rules. You know, champions can cross over, obviously, when there's, you know, just one champion for a division, but otherwise, unless there's a trade, no, this is it. And then maybe you'll start to get people to pay more attention, because right now it's just like, well, they're going to draft people to go from one brand to the other, and that's fine, but everybody moves across and there's no stopping them. So yeah, something needs to be done, and I hope they establish that tonight. But hey, it has been a pleasure. I want to give you another chance to plug the Substack, wrestling writing, your Twitter account, anything else you want out there.
Sure. Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Dominic D'Angelo. I wasn't verified before the blue check mark went away, and I'm still not. So you can check me out there. You can, check out my Substack, wrestlingwriting.substack.com, I believe. Check it out. I'm going to try to remain steady at posting things on there. I think it has the potential to kind of grow and get some eyes on it. As far as everything else goes, you can see my work at MLW on their Twitter. You can also see my work on the Click This social media accounts. You didn't know, their social media accounts, as well as Kurt and Kurt Angle, podcast. I have hopefully maybe some other things coming up, but, Jason, it's been a real pleasure. Like, I can't tell you how fun this has been. I am always game to talk wrestling with you. So whenever you need somebody, I'm willing to be that designated hitter that's now available in the National League. So, you just let me know.
Be sure to check out Dominic's work at wrestlingwriting.substack.com. Follow me and the brand at Pro Wrestling Net on Twitter. Many thanks to Dom for joining me, and thank you all for listening. Stop back and we'll do it again right here next week on The Boom.